With that, I'd like to now introduce Dr. Merrick, who's going to take us through the considerations in terms of the radiotherapeutic management using prostate brachytherapy. Greg.
Thank you. Multiple institutions have demonstrated the efficacy of prostate brachytherapy in patients with intermediate risk features, but we're left with significant controversy regarding the potential benefit of supplemental beam or androgen deprivation therapy, and that's what this short talk will focus on. Let's first start with a case. This is a gentleman I saw in February of 97, 55-year-old, healthy white male, had a small right apical nodule. PSA was 6.3. This was his first PSA, so velocity is not determinable. Gleason 7, 4 plus 3. Three of four biopsies on the right side, each with a relatively small percentage involvement of each core, with focal perineural invasion. The biopsies of the opposite side were negative, and he had no urinary bowel or sexual dysfunction. So the question is, this gentleman did opt for brachytherapy, and in his management, is there a role for the addition of supplemental beam and or androgen deprivation therapy? So the important question here is, does supplemental beam improve biochemical control rates? So let's go through these one by one. First, can brachytherapy treat extracapsular extension? Well, there's been some exquisite studies from the Mayo and Cleveland clinics which have demonstrated that when extraprostatic extension is present, in 99% of cases, it's limited to 5 millimeters, and in the vast majority of those cases, it's limited to 1 to 3 millimeters. So with brachytherapy, if we can treat with a 5 millimeter margin, we probably can eliminate the use of beam. So is supplemental beam necessary for intraprostatic cancerocytal doses? Do we need it to increase the biologic effect? Well, some data from Stock and Stone with day 30 dosimetry has demonstrated D90 cut points for monotherapeutic I-125 and palladium of 140 gray for iodine and 100 gray for palladium. And if you look at the rationale or the percent of the D90 to the prescription dose, it's about 93% for I-125 and about 80% for palladium. We believe that palladium is slightly more dose forgiving based on this data and others. Well, in our Seattle and Wheeling studies with day zero dosimetry, evaluating the implant at the time of maximal edema, we have defined an adequate implant as a D90 greater than 100% of prescription. So with good quality brachytherapy, the use of beam for intraprostatic dose escalation is not necessary. Now, supplemental beam can rectify inadequate implants, and we should all strive to minimize this potential utility of beam. But there's primarily two causes for inadequate implants. Poor technique, and that can be a result of inadequate brachytherapy treatment plans, whether they're done as a pre-plan or intraoperative. It's important that the plans be robust and be resilient to seed migration or seed loss, and or poor intraoperative execution. If you're not placing the seeds in the prostate or thereabout, of course, we don't expect high doses. And I also place implant-related edema here because this is often given as an excuse as to why brachytherapy plans don't look good, and that really should not be much of a factor. If you use a modified uniform or peripheral planning technique with generous treatment planning margins, edema has relatively little effect on brachytherapy quality on day zero or day 30, and it's minimally affected by seed migration. So in brachytherapy, the treatment plan, the philosophy, the robustness is extremely important. Now, what are the indications for supplemental beam? I think the only indications for supplemental beam and brachytherapy are either a substantial risk of seminal vesicle and or pelvic lymph node involvement, and if we do deliver radiation, almost always it encompasses the pelvic lymph nodes because of those indications.